We do have a breaking news story right now. It's developing, and that's what's transpiring right now in South Korea. Before I came on set, this was brought to my attention from the team. South Korean president declares martial law. Now, if you know what martial law means, suspension of your rights, the government now has control over the whole country, the whole nation. But there is an opposition to that. And then we're told that the South Korean parliament, the parliament there, votes to defy the president by lifting his declaration of martial law. The situation is still fluid. So as I do my research, by God's grace, if there's something worthy, I will come forth and share with you what God is saying to us as a result of this event. I believe nothing happens by accident. Everything is actually a role, a scene, an act in the great drama between Christ and Satan. And the last act in the drama is upon us. Now, some may be asking, will the United States get involved? I don't know. What I do know is the U.S. only gets involved in nations' issues if they have an interest at stake. Remember, Henry Kissinger once said, America has no permanent friends, only interests. With that in mind, we have come to Midday Power Surge. I want to thank you for joining us. And today, we are going to be covering some solemn, solemn themes. Number one, proof. The mark of Satan, the mark of the beast, proof will be implemented nationally here in America first, and then internationally. We are going to unpack that for you today. And secondly, there is no doubt, headline reads, there's no doubt that the incoming president here in America will implement Project 2025, and that is Donald Trump. What do all these things mean based on end time prophecies in the scriptures? What do all these things say to God's people in the last days as it pertains to the work of preparation, implementing those five keys of survival? You have to stay tuned. And today I do have a special guest, no stranger, Marie Diaz from Eyes on the Times. Let's get right into it, Marie. What are you focused on based on current events, fulfilling end time Bible prophecies? Marie.
Well, Pastor, as you rightly stated, it is official. The leader of Project 2025 has stated that Project 2025 is the agenda and that President-elect Trump will be implementing their agenda. And so this has great implications for all of God's people. And we're going to dive right into that. So let's just take a look at this first headline, which is coming from Media Matters. And here it says, Heritage President Kevin Roberts says, there's no doubt that Trump will implement Project 2025. You know, now this is quite a 180 when we're considering the remarks and statements that President Trump said prior to his election. And, you know, obviously, the head of Heritage is contradicting what President-elect has said. And so the question we have to ask ourselves is, why is he so confident? Why is he able to make these remarks? And I'm going to submit to you that it's because he has everything in place that he needs to be able to fulfill their agenda. And so in order for us, again, to be able to understand the significance of what we're covering today, I think it's important for us to break down into great detail what the Heritage Foundation think tank, what they actually do in order for them to be able to move forward with their agenda. So we're going to take a look at several clips and we're going to, give some brief commentary in between each clip. So let's take a listen to this first clip here.
Here it is. Clip one.
We're a public policy organization, so like other think tanks, we research policies. We work on every policy issue in the United States and also have a significant international presence. There are about 350 full-time employees. We're the largest conservative think tank in the world, best as I can tell. We don't exist to be the largest, but we've become that over the last 50 years because in addition to doing research, what makes us distinctive is that we also advocate for it. And so in Washington, we have a team of lobbyists who go and advocate for good legislation and work against bad legislation. So rather than the sort of quasi-university approach of most think tanks, there's a component to our work which is really focused on action. In fact, we have a sister organization, which I also lead, called Heritage Action.
That's a whole lot in that one remark. Marie.
Yes. And so a couple of things that I want to underscore, which he mentioned in the clip there, is the fact that their think tank, they craft policies, right? And the purpose of crafting these policies, obviously, is because they want to implement them. And he went on to say what makes the distinction between his think tank and other think tanks is the fact that they advocate the legislation of their policies. And so, of course, as we go through this presentation, you're going to see why that is significant. The other thing that we want to mention here is that their focus isn't solely on the federal level, but they're also going to help to implement policies through the state legislators as well. And so let's take a listen to the next clip where he's going to underscore
before
this.
Before we go there, once I heard that clip, he just stated that they are the largest think tank, not only in America, internationally. Let that sink in. So whatever their policy is, whatever their goal is, it's not only for America. It's for the whole world. So let's say, before we prove it, that they want to join church and state in America. What is their agenda internationally?
Join church and state.
Let's say they want to implement Sunday worship by law in America, Sunday rest by law in America. What is the agenda globally?
Sunday rest.
This is the largest think tank, the largest policy-making organization on the top side of the earth. Why aren't we focused on this organization? Why not? And remember, for the mark of Satan to be implemented, the mark of the beast, it's coming through policy-making, legislation. That's how it's coming. And that's why we have proof. The mark of Satan, the mark of the beast, is going to be implemented nationally and internationally. And he's on record stating Sunday rest, Sunday worship by law. That means the organization supersedes presidents and prime ministers. Think about that. They are the engine in the nations, the engine in global nations. Policy-making organization, Heritage. What a name. What a name. And this man is on record contradicting the president. I wonder, what if other people would be on record publicly contradicting the president and they're actually under the umbrella of the president? What would happen to such persons? Think about that, Marie. Over a plethora of time, he's on record contradicting the president and the president-elect. Here it is, clip two.
Second point of distinction is that in addition to the work we do at the federal level, we also have a lot of activity in state capitals, in state legislatures. And so what we're trying to do is, in the United States, revitalize federalism so that more policy action is coming from the states, making Washington less important.
Marie, before you go, let me add on that point. I mean, what if I am an employee of a company and the CEO makes a statement publicly and over again, when I'm interviewed in the public, I contradict that CEO? What would the CEO do to me?
Get rid of you.
If the CEO doesn't do anything, so who is in charge? Well, let that sink in. Murray, go ahead.
Right. Well, it goes to show that, you know, obviously he has his own agenda in mind, regardless to what the president is saying. And this is what I think we want to emphasize here in this presentation. So again, now what we just want to reiterate what he just said in that clip that was just played. He talked about the fact that they are moving aggressively on the state and the local levels. Now, this is significant because we are already seeing the effects of what they've done through this think tank. To have its effect in some of the legislation that has been coming out from some of the local governors and the legislators, like I said, on the state level. More namely, we're talking about the fact that they just recently introduced, you know, commandments and placing Bibles back into school, and they're incorporating religion into the curriculum. And Pastor, you've done several presentations where we've been able to show that there is a direct link between Project 2025 and some of these governors who are introducing these religious laws. And so the other point that I wanted to bring out, you know, when we're discussing this idea of them working through the states, is the fact that Jonathan Berry, who has been working hand in hand with Project 2025, in fact, he wrote the labor standard portion of the Project 2025. And he states that in that they want to be able to legislate Sunday rest laws, Sabbath laws, and that they aren't looking to implement it at the federal level, but at the state level. And so again, this is important for us to bear in mind as we're looking at this through the lens of prophecy to see how the Sunday law movement is going to gain its footing. It's not going to happen at the federal level. We saw this take place also with the introduction of same-sex union laws, right? It happened state by state. And once it had gone into a majority of the states, then they were able to legislate it at the federal level. And so this is why it's important for us to keep our eyes on the movements that are taking place at the local levels, because I believe this is where, you know, the grassroots, and if you really think about it, right, you know, grassroots movements don't tend to go straight to the federal government. It starts at the local levels, right? And it makes its way through the mayors and to the governor, and then eventually on the state level, and then you get to the federal government. So I think it's important as a people that we're looking at what's happening on the state levels. And so now we're going to move on to another point. And Pastor, you touched on it briefly, and you talked about the fact that this movement isn't exclusive to the United States. And it's unfortunate that I think that we've kind of looked at it as an isolated incident or an isolated movement here in the United States. But he's going to elaborate a little bit more on that point. And so we're going to take a look at this next video clip and where he mentions how they're making inroads in other areas of the world. So let's take a listen.
Clip three.
And then the last part, which you and I were talking about before we started our formal conversation, is that we're very active internationally. We're here in Britain often, across Europe, across the world. We have a big team of international scholars who've worked in a lot of presidential administrations. Perhaps some of them will be going back in. We'll see what President and the Vice President have to say about that. But ultimately, what we're trying to do is not just revitalize the conservative movement writ large, but also to make sure that the emphasis on self-governance, on freedom properly understood, on economic deregulation are not just happening in the United States, but in as many societies across the world as we can.
That's a whole lot right there. Marie.
Right. And so, I mean, he just said it, you know, that this is a global effort. And so I'm hoping that as we're listening to these things, it'll help us to wake up to really see just that the Sunday law movement is making its way on in darkness and that, you know, it's on foot. Now,
I want to chime in here. Three things he mentioned. He said the conservative movement and many people who are not familiar with his previous statements would take that to mean Heritage Foundation, Kevin Roberts, and Project 2025 mandate for leadership is simply connected to the conservative wing of politics. But if you recall, he was on an interview and he actually stated whether it was the Donkey Party who won or the Elephant Party, it does not matter, because when it comes on to policy making in America, they, Elephant Donkey, have to come to us. That's startling right there. So when you go overseas, it's the same template. Number two, he mentioned about economics. Do you realize how he blended both? He's talking about conservative movement, religion, and the government overseeing religion in America. And then he mentioned economics. That is the mark of the beast template and system. You can't buy or sell except you worship falsely. And lastly, I want to get your point on this, because in this clip he mentioned that we are for freedom. If someone were to retort and say, well, it's right, he just said he wants freedom for everybody, what would you say?
Of course, they tell you that they want freedom for everyone, but it's freedom as long as you're abiding by what they say is right, how they say that you ought to worship. And of course, we have to look at everything through the lens of the Bible and the spirit of prophecy to see where these things are tending. And so that's how I would address that.
You may move on.
Yes. And so now we're going to move forward here. And of course, you know, based solely on what we've presented thus far, you know, we're not really able to see how Project 2025 is going to be able to implement their policies. We're going to take a look at this next article, which I think gives us a little bit more insight as to how they're going to be able to do this. This article is coming from The Independent. It says Trump's cabinet is filling up with Project 2025's authors, despite him saying that he has no idea what it is. And there's another article that's coming from AP News. It says, after Trump's Project 2025 denials, he is tapping its authors and influencers for key roles. And I think that's really significant for us to pay attention to that, right? Because he's not just picking somebody who's haphazardly associated with Project 2025. He's picking individuals who are steeped into this agenda, into this plan. And we're going to see that, like I said, you know, as we're moving forward in this presentation. And also, of course, the individuals that he's picked, you know, they've done their due diligence, and so they know how to navigate the legal system. And since we're talking about these key figures, I think it's important for us to go back to Kevin Roberts to see what he has to say about the individuals that are being selected to fill Trump's cabinet. And I also want you to listen and to what he has to say about who in particular we as individuals should pay attention to. So let's take a listen to that.
Here it is.
Okay. And so of these other nominations, who are you most excited about? Russ Fort, John Ratcliffe, Pete Hoekstra. What can you tell me about
that? Man, you're wanting me to pick winners and losers.
Well, yeah. No, you don't. They're all winners, I'm sure.
They're all winners. They're all winners.
But who should listeners be keep their eye on?
Russ Fort, for sure.
Okay, and why is that?
Both because of who he is, as well as the position he has.
And his position is?
Has been appointed to be director of the Office of Management and Budget, which sounds really boring. And if you don't like numbers, maybe it is. But this was a position that Russ had in the first Trump term. And it's an important position regardless of who occupies it, because basically that director and his or her staff can have their fingers in all aspects of the federal budget. And so if you've been elected, as Trump and Vance have, in part to rein in the expansive growth of the federal government, that position's important. And the second thing is, Russ is, who's probably our closest collaborator on Project 2025 outside of Heritage, and he's a Heritage alumnus.
Mm-hmm. Right. Startling, right? So if I had an agenda that I was attempting to, you know, propel in the government, right? And I'm telling you, you should pay attention to this individual. I think it behooves all of us to pay attention to this particular individual, right? And so let's break this down a little bit, some of the points that he discussed. He said that we should pay attention to who he is and the position that he has. Now, if we were just to take that at surface value and you know what I mean, solely, you would know that the position that he has is one of authority and one that can affect change throughout the entire administration. And one of the reasons why he's saying that this position is so important is because he holds the controls, the purse strings of the administration, right? And so if you don't want exactly the money, so if you don't want a particular agency or something in the government to function, you just reduce the amount of money that's being given to this particular agency. And so he has immense power through this particular Office of Management and Budget. But I think there's also some other points that's really important for us to emphasize here. And we're going to play one other clip. And I think this next clip really encapsulates the job or the position, the director of Office of Management and Budget. And so let's just take a listen to that. And I think it'll give us a better idea of what this office and its purposes are.
Okay, here it is.
Parties. OMB is really a government in miniature. Every agency, every function of government is represented in one building with a career staff of roughly 400 to 450 people, and then a political staff that comes in with each administration. The breadth of that reach really spans all aspects of policy, budgeting, and management. And important
policy, budgeting, and management in one office.
Exactly. You said it. You said it, Pastor, right? And he also said it's government in miniature. And so I was trying to figure out exactly where he kind of ranks in the government. And so I did some research. And so from what I've gathered, so there's the president, the vice president, then it's chief of staff, and then there's the OMB office. So he's in a really, really powerful position. Yeah, so he's fourth in command, right? And so what he also said is that all of the agencies, every single agency in the U.S. government sits under the umbrella of the OMB office. And so I'm hoping that your audience is starting to see just how much of a role this director, like I said, who is an author of Project 2025, I mean, just the power that he's going to be able to yield or wield, excuse me, in this particular position. And now I'm just going to read, I didn't give Pastor any slides for this, but I'm just going to read a couple of points in my research that I was able to find that gives us kind of illustrates a little bit better the breadth, you know, of this position. It says allocating resources, it determines funding levels for programs, ensuring alignment with the president's vision. Now we're going to talk about that a little bit later, right? It says, now your audience is going to see also in another clip that Kevin Roberts, you know, is going to state that President Trump's agenda, which is Agenda 47 and Project 2025, they overlap each other. And so when you're thinking about the policies that are being put into place, it's Project 2025's policies that are being put into place, right? And so here's some other points. It says facilitating collaboration. OMB acts as a central coordinator among federal agencies to ensure cohesive policy implementations. Pastor, you just touched on that. Policy implementation, right? Whose policies? Kevin Roberts just told you earlier in our presentation that the whole purpose, the objective of this think tank is to create policies, but not only create them, but to have them legislated. So they're not only creating these policies, they're working to have them legislate them.
And then?
Yes, and they dole out the money to those who are actively doing what they want them to do. Now, one of the other points, it says, by serving as a bridge between president and federal agencies, the OMB ensures that executive policies are translated into actionable plans, funded appropriately, and implemented effectively. Lord have mercy. I mean, again, he has control over everything. Now, I really wanted to kind of try to figure out some sort of analogy so that your audience would be able to have kind of a clear view of his role. And so if you want to think of his position kind of in the realm of, you know, sports, right? So you want to think of the Office of Management kind of as the head coach of a sports team. And you want to think of the president as the owner of the team, right? And you want to think of the federal agencies as the players. Mm-hmm. And so hopefully that'll be able to illustrate it a little bit better. So although the OMB office or Russ Vought is going to be implementing what is supposed to be President Trump's agenda, right? He's really the one that's on the field. And I think it's important because when you think about a literal game, a literal football game, right? Most people don't attribute the win to the owner of the team, right? They attribute it to the coach, who is the one who's working behind the scenes, working with the players to be able to implement the policies. And so, you know, it's just something that's really scary to think of the power that Project 2025 is going to wield through Russ Folt in this particular position. I didn't know, Pastor, if you had anything else that you wanted to add here before I go to my next point.
Continue.
Okay. Now, when I was thinking about this as I was going through my presentation, you know, there were a couple of thoughts that were going through my mind, because I'm always trying to look for the biblical significance, trying to see if there are any parallels in this. And of course, you know, we've in past presentations, we've discussed the fact that there are some similarities between King Darius and, you know, and his counselors crafting policies and, you know, and obviously he was able to get it signed into law, and thus it resulted in the persecution of Daniel in the lion's den. But I saw another parallel, and I was thinking about King Ahasuerus, right, and Haman, and how Haman worked for King Ahasuerus, right? And because Mordecai wouldn't pay homage or obeisance to Haman, right? He was able to devise a plan, and he was able to then go to the king who decreed, right? And was able to have a law legislated, right? Which essentially caused or was designed to get rid of God's people. And so, and of course, I'm looking at this, I'm looking at the parallels, and I'm thinking about what's going to happen in the future. And so if you place the players where they're supposed to be, right, you have, you know, Russ Folt similar in a similar position to Haman, right? He's working hand in hand with the king. And at some point, there's going to be some sort of legislation, some sort of law that's going to come out, a death decree, essentially, right? For those who refuse to pay homage, not only to Haman, but to this entire system. So there's definitely some parallels there. And again, I think this is why it's so important for us to make sure that we're paying attention to what's happening with Project 2025 and seeing the correlation from a biblical perspective.
All right. And Russ Folt is a faithful Seventh-day Adventist, right? Kevin Roberts is a staunch Orthodox Seventh-day Adventist, correct?
No, sir.
So we look at Kevin Roberts, Heritage. Cowboy Catholic is his title. Cowboy. I'm not sure who the Indians are, but Cowboy Catholic. And he calls the Vatican, the Pope, Mother Church, that the policies he's implementing comes from Mother Church. Everybody watch this now. So since the policies are coming from Mother Church, that means the actual policies of America are going to be Roman Catholic policies. Now, you may have a vehicle, because since Marie's using all these analogies, you can have a vehicle. And a good mechanic and body man can pull that vehicle down and a different exterior. But you'll judge the effectiveness of that vehicle by its engine. The engine. Most important thing, the engine. Then you can talk about transmission, etc. Engine. Engine, the policies of America. So if America is going to form, Marie, an image to popery, what should we begin to see? Talk to us.
Well, the same things that were happening in the Catholic Church are the same things that you're going to see implemented here in the United States.
So we're now seeing the formation of the image of the beast based on policies. The policies of popery and Jesuitism are now being rolled out in America. So very, very soon, Revelation 13:11 will be fulfilled. America will speak as a dragon. Verse 13 through 14, form that image. Church controlling state, just as in popery. The church controls the state as it was in the old world. Church controls state and persecuted all dissenters. And the Bible says it's going to happen in America. Inspiration says Roman Catholic principles will be taken under the care and protection of the United States of America. Then we're told national apostasy will lead to national ruin, a Sunderlaw crisis. Marie, continue.
Mercy. So we're going to play another clip. And in this clip, the host and Kevin Roberts are going to discuss, again, the importance of this role that Russ Vought is going to fill. And he's going to tell us that this particular role is they're going to utilize it to be able to affect radical change in the U.S. government. And so let's just take a listen to what he has to say.
Radical and aggressive. They love these synonyms. And America will speak as a dragon. Radical, aggressive. Here it is.
So one of those names was Russ Vought. Russell Vought, who I think it was announced yesterday, is going to be in charge of the Office of Management and Budget, the OMB, as part of the new Trump administration. This was the actual agency that he was writing about in his section of Project 2025, which he was one of the authors of, talking about how it can be used to deliver much more radical change. So in some very direct senses, Project 2025 is happening, no matter what anyone says.
Russ is the greatest living conservative expert on the Office of Management and Budget. Not only did he write that chapter in Mandate for Leadership, he also served in that capacity in the last Trump term. And so if there's anyone who understands how you legally, appropriately, and aggressively use the Office of Management and Budget to do the will of the American people rather than the will of Washington elites, it's Russ Vought.
Some of the, a lot maybe, of the Project 2025 agenda may now actually happen no matter what the candidate, as then was saying. Is that fair?
It is fair, and there's no doubt that that will happen. I don't mean that with any disrespect to President Trump, whom he knows, who is a friend, but just to say there is so much overlap between President Trump's official campaign platform, Agenda 47, and the policies in Project 2025. That's what I mean when I said that this is sort of boring in one sense, because it's not newsworthy that the Republican candidate for president would be saying many, if not most, of the same things that the conservative movement itself would be saying.
Mercy.
That is not the crescendo. I don't know what a crescendo is, Marie.
I don't know. What arrogance,
right? Face. Braggadocious.
I mean, and he calls President Trump a friend. And unfortunately, I mean, no disrespect to President Trump, elect Trump, but it's as if they're using him as a pawn, you know, to forward their agenda. And, you know, for those of us that want to see it, you'll be able to see it, you know, and I just want to, again, underscore the fact that he says that there is no doubt. He just said it, you know, Pastor, I don't know if you want to play it again. He said there's no doubt Project 2025 will happen. And so
is happening.
Yes.
It is happening, yeah. Whether anyone, yeah, whatever people say. And when Kevin Roberts chimed in, did he say, no, hold on there, it's not happening? Mm-hmm. He just moved along. Here it is. Maybe someone missed it. Here it is.
So one of those names was Russ Vought. Russell Vought, who I think it was announced yesterday, is going to be in charge of the Office of Management and Budget, the OMB, as part of the new Trump administration. This was the actual agency that he was writing about in his section of Project 2025, which he was one of the authors of, talking about how it can be used to deliver much more radical change. So in some very direct senses, Project 2025 is happening, no matter what anyone says.
Russ is the greatest living conservative expert on the Office of Management.
Mercy, right? And so, you know, there's this, you know, term that people often use. They say the fix is in, right? And that's because it's rigged. It's been manipulated, predetermined. And so, as I mentioned, you know, when we began this presentation, it's because they have all of their players in place. And, you know, sometimes I feel like, you know, as Adventists, you know, we're catching up with the movement. We should have been ahead of the movement. We should have been able to call these things before, you know, they took place. And this is why I think it's so important for us to make sure that we're getting this information out. Now, this is where we're going to kind of land the plane with this presentation. We kind of want to leave you on a cliffhanger because we have a new Eyes on the Times video that's going to be coming out. And the reason why I thought it was important to create this video is because you are going to see for yourself, we're going to give you a little teaser, you're going to see for yourself the language, you know, that Russ Vogt is using. I mean, the way he's talking, not just about using his position just to further, you know, just a very secular kind of objective, but he is going to tell you emphatically that they are looking to turn the United States into a Christian nation. I don't know if I can emphasize this enough. You need to tune into this video once it's released this evening, because like I said, he's going to reiterate over and over again, not just that we want to turn the United States into a Christian nation, but we want to implement it through our policies and our laws. This is not just what I'm saying. This is what he is going to say verbatim, not my interpretation. This is what he is going to say. And so, Pastor, let's play this teaser for them so that hopefully it'll, you know, whet your appetite so that you'll want to see the video once we release it.
Here it is.
View.
And one of those correctives is that we're a nation under God. Mm. So we talk about being a nation that's for God. That's a consensus that we want to renew in this country, that we have religious liberty, but it cannot come from this notion that a country isn't understanding the reality that it has to obey God. And there is only one true God, and that is Jesus Christ, our Lord.
You hit upon the first priority of our organization is to regain a notion in this country, a consensus that we're not a secular country, that we are a Christian nation as founded. And that should be shared by everyone, even if they have religious liberty for another faith. But that to the extent that you don't have that consensus, you have a culture and a nation that just disintegrates.
So I want to make sure that we can say we're a Christian nation. And my viewpoint is mostly that I would probably be Christian nationism. That's pretty close to Christian nationalism. Can we, if we're going to have legal immigration, can we get people that actually believe in Christianity? Is that something?
So that is a big part of what we do, is reestablishing that notion in our public policy, and to be able to argue on the basis of public policy those certain truths. And that truth just comes from revelation. And that doesn't mean that everyone agrees with it, but can we at least have Christians in the public policy realm that argue from their perspective that they hold, as opposed to kind of this Christian secularism?
You heard it for yourself. You know, they heard it. I don't know what else. And again, in context of what we just presented, Kevin Roberts is elated that Russ Vogt has been put into this position. He is fourth in command. We talked about the fact that they are going to use this position to affect radical change throughout the government. And he just told you their objective is to implement religious laws. I don't know how else, you know, we can make it any plainer than we already have. And we've already talked about the fact that an integral part of Project 2025 is to legislate Sunday laws. I mean, it's here, Pastor. I don't know if there's anything else that you want to
say. Oh, yes. I have a lot more to say. Okay. But what I want to do, I don't want this video to extend too long. I want them to go and watch the video. I'm going to give a time when that video is going to be released. If you notice, Russell Vogt just stated that their agenda, you can call it Christian nationism, and then he said it's very close to Christian nationalism. He said that. The same Russell Vogt who actually said, I don't want to serve with anybody who is not willing to make sacrifices or even shed their blood for this cause. He actually said, we as men of this movement should be willing to call our wives and families and say, listen, we might not return home for several days because we are on a mission here and we're willing to give our lives even to die. That's what he said. Aggressive movement. And since this is happening in America, can you imagine what's happening in, let's say, the UK? Because they span the whole world. Now, notice what, I want to put something in the record here. Not yet, preacher. I want to go to something just to tie this in.
You know, you
tie this in. Here is a Christian nationalist, one of the leading voices, Stephen Wolf, and hear what he said about J.D. Vance. Very similar. So you have J.D. Vance, Stephen Wolf, and Stephen Wolf is saying J.D. Vance is in our circle. Stephen Wolf is Christian nationalist. Russ Vogt just said we are akin to Christian nationalism. Once I confirm this, then let's take a look at what Christian nationalists are pushing. Watch this.
You know, our separation from Vance is not that far. I can't.
Clip two.
But I think the within the network of friends in the kind of new right, you know, network, I think he's connected to that. So
they're all connected. Now, here is what they all believe and what the agenda is. Here is a Christian nationalist.
My argument, you're not punishing for the sin of unbelief that's outwardly expressed.
This one.
The best critique is basically that what you're doing is it's a de facto privileging of Christianity, because mm-hmm. which religion has the Sabbath on Sunday? Well, it's Christianity. And so you're not doing it on Saturday.
Don't argue with us. We're simply playing what they have said contextually. Listen now. So when they say freedom, Marie, it's mm-hmm. you'll have freedom if you go along with our agenda. That's Revelation 13. It doesn't say you can't buy or sell. Mm-mm. You can't buy or sell if you refuse the mark of the beast. So you have freedom to buy and sell only if you go along with the agenda. Don't let them deceive you. Here it is. Christian nationalist Russell Vogt.
In a pluralist society, if you reinstate blue laws, then you would have to outlaw sports teams on Saturday in order to accommodate Jews for the Sabbath or Muslims, Seventh-day Adventist. So how do you kind of, you know, thread that needle?
Well, we're not obligated to satisfy every group under the sun. You have to make these judgments.
Okay, Marie, any closing thoughts here? Because I want them to go watch the video we're going to release shortly.
Sure. And, you know, I actually want to comment on that as well. You know, I really am encouraging your audience to take a look at the Eyes on the Times video, not simply because I've created it, but because I think it can be a tool to be able to assist others, to be able to understand where we are in this movement. The Eyes on the Times videos are actually really personal to me. And the reason why it's really personal is because, little testimony, when I converted to Adventism, you know, some 10 plus years ago, it was because somebody created a video. And, you know, as a former Sunday keeper, we weren't allowed to look at other sermons from other denominations. And providentially, it was because a non-Adventist gave me this video and said, hey, you should look into this video. It was a video that had like a million views. And it was this very simple video. And it was called like something like the mark of the beast isn't a microchip. And I was determined to prove this video wrong. And it was that video that precipitated my walk, my conversion to Adventism. So like I said, this is why these videos are very personal to me, because there are some individuals that aren't going to listen to a lengthy sermon. They're not going to sit down and do a Bible study with you, and they can't fight with a video. And so, you know, if you can, I'm asking you to please share it with others. But I did want to share, you know, another point, actually two quotes from The Spirit of Prophecy, just to kind of give this a boost. It says in The Great Controversy, page 605, paragraph 3, she says, heretofore, those who have presented the truth of the third angel's message have often been regarded as mere alarmists. Their predictions that religious intolerance would gain control in the United States that the church and state would unite to persecute those who keep the commandments of God have been pronounced groundless and absurd. It has been confidently declared that this land could never become more than what it has been, the defender of religious freedom. But, and this is why it's so important to present these things, she says, but as the question of enforcing Sunday observance is widely agitated, this is what we're seeing now. She says, the event so long doubted, disbelieved, is seen to be approaching, and the third message will produce an effect which it could not have had before. So we've been preaching this message for years, right? And people are like, yes, I hear you, I hear you. But it's because the agitations weren't as such to be able to give the message impetus. And so when you're sharing these messages, when you're showing how Bible is being fulfilled, this is what's going to give that third message impetus. But like I said, I also wanted to share one other quote from Christ's Object Lesson. And this is something that I hold very near and dear to my heart, because sometimes you're sharing these truths with your friends, your family members, and it seems that it's not, you know, you haven't seen their conversion. They're not accepting the message. I want you to take this to heart. She says, speaking of the word, the good seed may for a time lie unnoticed in a cold, selfish, worldly heart, giving no evidence that it has taken root. But afterward, as the Spirit of God breathes on the soul, the hidden seed springs up and at last bears fruit to the glory of God. It is our life work, in our life work, we know not which shall prosper, this or that. This is not a question for us to settle. We are to do our work and leave the result with God. And I believe that, right? I believe that if you plant the seed, God will water, God will give it sunshine. And at the appointed time, that seed will bear fruit. So I yield back to you, Pastor.
In closing, if someone is going to doubt that statement in the book, Great Controversy, page 605, the scripture that is a nail in a sure place for what we're covering, the policy making, is Daniel chapter 8. And once you walk down and analyze, explain the symbols, verse 23 through verse 25 is the papacy. And verse number 24, his power shall be mighty, but not by his own power. He shall destroy wonderfully, prosper and practice, destroy the mighty and holy people. How will he practice? How will he prosper? Verse 25, and through his policy also, he shall cause craft to prosper in his hand. What's the key word right there, Marie?
Craft, policy. So prosper,
Lord
have mercy.
That's it. The crafty policies. So you won't see the papacy in the front, like Jezebel behind the curtains, Herodias behind the curtains, but she's working through others based on crafty policies. So what we need to do now is look at what movement is the premier policy, crafting policy, implementing organization in America. And that's what we're doing. Based on the prophecy, which organization nationally, globally, is the one spearheading policies, Heritage Foundation. That's the nail right there. And then we're told once you see that, the second coming of Christ is near, because then that papal power is going to regain power. My quotation, Marie, as you gave the statement from Christ's Object Lessons, my recent quote, which I have drawn much strength from, and I have pledged to God, I'm going to share it as frequently as possible, is Life Sketches, page 196. For we have nothing to fear for the future, except we forget. We have nothing to fear for the future, except we shall forget how the Lord has led. Ebenezers, why fear now and in the future when you can look back at the great blessings in the past to draw strength today? 2 Corinthians chapter 4, verse 7 through verse 9. Marie, we are troubled on every side, but not distressed. Perplexed, but not in despair. Persecuted, not forsaken. Cast down, not destroyed. At this time, we're going to release that video at 3 p.m. Eastern, Marie. What do you think?
I think that sounds good.
All right, 3 p.m. Eastern, everybody. I'm going to release that video 3 p.m. Eastern right here on the platform. So please, you know what to do with it. Share it, all right? And if you're new here, please consider subscribing, joining. Not subscribe to me. You're subscribing to God's movement, one of God's platforms here. And click that bell for notification. Comment, of course, and share the video. Give the video a thumbs up as you're being blessed by the content. Safe to Serve, local, international, joining us now and hereafter. Thank you for making a sacrifice to join us. Let's pray. Father in heaven, into your hands we commit and commend the keeping of our souls, and we claim the promise of Philippians 1:6, being confident of this very thing, he who hath begun the good work will perform it. We cling to Deuteronomy 33, verse 25. As your days, so shall thy strength be. As your days, so shall your strength be. Thank you, dear Jesus. Keep us faithful as we implement by your grace the five keys of survival. It's our prayer in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen. Beloved, thank you again for joining us, Marie.
Thank you.
All right, friends. By God's grace, stay tuned for that video at 3 p.m. I'll see you tomorrow at 12 noon Eastern for Midday Power Surge. Remain faithful. Remain ready. Get others ready. The protest, the reformation continues.